It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Researchers at the University of Pittsburgh have unlocked a treasure trove of public health data, weekly surveillance reports for reportable diseases in the United States going back more than 125 years. And it's the easily searchable database available after researchers collected and digitized the reports that was described in the most recent issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. I'm joined now in Studio A by Dr. Donald Burke, Dean of the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. Dr. Burke, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
And also with us is the lead author of the report, Dr. Willem van Panhouse, Assistant Professor of Epidemiology at Pitt Public Health. Dr. van Panhouse, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting us.
And you can join the conversation with your comments and questions at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is ESSPGH@WESA.FM, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Dr. van Panhouse, how did Pitt researchers end up embarking on the process of digitizing years, over a century's worth of medical records?
Well, Paul, that work actually started when we were trying to do modeling of infectious diseases. And for every research project that we did, we had to dig up public health records, us as well as our colleagues. And so by replicating these efforts, there was a lot of redundancies. And we found that the U.S. data are actually in the public domain, published every week. And so we embarked upon digitizing these data to fuel our own research as well as making it available for other users, other researchers, students, policymakers to freely use. And that way we really accelerate the scientific discovery based on data like this.
So it's just quicker access to information.
Exactly, yeah.
And Dr. Burke, how would you describe the goal of this project? With all of this information, what can you then do?
Infectious disease control has been a top public health priority since the beginning of the public health over a century ago. And the data has been available, but it's been hard to get at. That to get at the data, you had to go to the library, dig it out. You could go to websites, but you wouldn't be able to download it or analyze it. When we look at infectious disease data, we're not just looking at the case counts. We're looking for patterns. We're trying to decide how the disease spreads. Can we predict when the epidemic will peak? Where will it go next? And by having these historical data, it lets us be much better at this modeling forward decision support. Then having the models, we can make decisions about which vaccine to use, when to use it, what age group to apply the vaccine to, are there any other measures? So having the data allows you to have evidence, to have a sensible approach, a science-based approach to disease control.
And how many diseases do you have accounts for, gentlemen?
The entire database is based on U.S. CDC reports received by the state health
Center
offices,
for Disease Control.
Centers for Disease
out of
Control in Atlanta. They receive reports from every state health office for the last 125 years, and the diseases that we have reflect exactly what's been reported every week. And currently, over 125 years, a total of 56 diseases, with 72 subtypes of diseases, have been reported and can be found in our database.
And how is the data then applied to controlling communicable diseases? Because I guess the key here is just preventing the spread of the disease. So with more knowledge and quicker access to that, can you slow the spread of a particular disease or diseases?
It's not just the quicker access, but to have all of the data available in one place so that when we look at the pattern of an infectious disease, it may be big in Pittsburgh one year, low in Cleveland the next year. It may be spreading from one coast to the other coast. And so after you study diseases over a long period of time, you get to see the patterns. You get to see the sort of the expected trajectory of the epidemic. And when you have that kind of information, then you can decide what's the best timing for the intervention, what's the best place to have the intervention. Just understanding the disease is really the objective.
Does the ability to isolate the areas where the outbreaks are occurring, where the disease maybe is spreading the most rapidly, then tell you more about the conditions? For example, if you isolate an outbreak on the East Coast, for example, can that tell you something about the disease?
Sure. We're frankly not that good at predicting diseases right now. We're trying to get better at it. But it does seem that certain diseases are susceptible to the relative humidity or the temperature or other environmental factors. We know that certain diseases, it matters what the density of people is or what the level of interaction between those is. But to actually find the mathematical relationships between weather or sociodemographics and disease spread, you need the data. You need to analyze the data and to look for the correlations, look for the relationships so you can turn it into a predictive science.
And can you, Dr. Van Penhouse, can you describe the categorization process? Once you have the information, then what areas do you put it into so that you're able to make certain aspects of understanding the disease more clear, not only for yourselves but others who are seeing this data?
Yeah, so one of the biggest challenges was to make this easily available. It's a very complex data set with diseases that have changed over time and reporting that has changed over time. And so the first step that we did was to standardize as much as possible all the types of report into a common format and make a website that people can understand and that not only scientists but also the general public, policymakers, and students can navigate and access. And then using these data, as Dr. Berg mentioned, look at spatial patterns, where in the country do certain outbreaks occur and where not. And then we took it to the next step of seeing if we could find a difference between before and after vaccines were licensed in the U.S. And that's how we could make an example of an analysis using the highly resolution of this data, as well as showing national historic trends of these of a couple of very important diseases.
That's Dr. Willem van Penhouse, assistant professor of epidemiology at Pitt Public Health. Also with us is Dr. Donald Burke, dean of the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. We are talking about the digitizing of reportable diseases. Reports that have been accumulating over the last 125 years that have now been put into a searchable database, which is more easily accessible for researchers. And I'm curious, gentlemen, now that the information is online, are you seeing an increase in traffic among people who need this information? Dr. Van Penhouse?
Yes, Paul, it's a great question. And actually, over the last couple of days since the article came out, we're monitoring, of course, the traffic on our website and the number of downloads that people do for data. And we've seen we have had up to 600 registrations over the last couple of weeks. 15,000 people have visited the website to actually navigate the system. And as well, the interest that this has generated among the public. A couple of the media reports that have featured our database really sparked discussion among people about the value of historical public health data, about the impact of vaccination programs. And so we've seen a spike of interest in the topic of public health programs, as well as in using these actual data to look for themselves what patterns they can find.
412-246-2002, the number to call if you would like to join the conversation if you have a comment or a question for either of our guests, Dr. Burke or Dr. Van Penhouse. 412-246-2002, the number to call to join the conversation. Gentlemen, should open access to disease surveillance records be standard practice everywhere after this?
Sure. These are data that were painstakingly collected by physicians, nurses, public health practitioners over many, many years. And they were, for the most part, the collection process was a public process. It was paid for by public dollars to collect these reports and make them. So they should be publicly accessible. We refer to this process as data rescue, that the data is there, but it's buried. No one can use it. And we think that these kind of historical records that give you historical insights need to be rescued. So that's why we did the whole project. And it wasn't just for us. We felt that this was a very valuable tool, valuable resource for the entire scientific community.
Dr. Burke, you say that historical records are an undervalued resource. Why?
We called this project Project Tycho. It was named after the Danish astronomer Tycho Brahe, who collected movement of the planets. And he collected it and collected it. And
this is going back centuries.
This is 500 years ago. His assistant, Kepler, came along and was able to take these what at that time were essentially unused or undervalued data and derive the laws of planetary motion from these data that had been collected. So it's a good example of when data is there, when the right person with the right idea and the right tools comes along, they can develop important insights. And so what we're hoping is that we've created an epidemiologic database, just like Tycho Brahe did for the movement of the planets, and that maybe someday epidemiological Keplers will come along and derive these predictive laws of epidemiology.
The idea of, for example, saving evidence, holding on to evidence until the technology catches up with, you know, like a DNA match or something like that, it sort of brings that to mind as an example of how this is useful.
Yeah, again, I think that there's lots of fields where the historical information can be useful that isn't currently useful simply because people can't get at it. Another philosopher once said that we live forward but understand backwards. That is that if you're trying to make decisions that are predictive based on the way you think the world is going to be, you have to base that on the historical record of what you already know or what has already happened. And if you can't get at that information, if you really are only confined to what you saw yesterday or in your own lifetime, then you're really not looking at the historical record. You're really not taking advantage of the information to have a sound basis for thinking about the future.
Dr. Van Panhouse, how many cases of contagious diseases have been prevented because of these records and also by making them more accessible?
Well, the records themselves have not prevented any diseases. What we can learn from these records is what the impact has been of public health programs. And so a total of, in our database, of almost 90 million cases, individual cases, have been reported to the federal health authorities and have been recorded. So that's information about 90,000 people, 90 million people, who have become sick, who went to their doctor, and who have contributed a case to the database. Then we look back at these data to see how many cases have been prevented by vaccination programs. And so we found that looking at the patterns before, since we do have very old data, looking at the patterns before vaccines even existed, before they were licensed, and then looking forward at the difference between before and after, and we found that for the seven diseases that we studied, a total of 100 million cases have been prevented by these programs, meaning that if the vaccines had not been introduced and patterns would just have continued as they were before, there would have been 100 million extra cases of these severe childhood diseases that did not happen because of vaccination programs. And so we hope that this kind of information can help policymakers make decisions about these programs to then continue preventing these cases. And that's how data can help prevent diseases.
One thing that we're seeing that's a bit alarming is a resurgence of some of these diseases, such as measles and mumps, rubella outbreaks reoccurring. Why are we seeing this, Dr. Burke?
In some ways, what's happening, this is a reflection of the success of the vaccine campaigns, is that because these are no longer real threats to families and children, because the vaccines have been so successful, they've essentially disappeared from the United States. And as a consequence, some people, some parents believe that that we don't need to vaccinate anymore, that there are side effects from vaccines, usually pretty mild but occasionally severe. And they do a calculation which says that if I don't vaccinate my child, I don't have to face the risk of a rare side effect versus a disease which no longer exists. But, you know, that's a paradox in that if everybody did that, then the disease would come roaring back immediately. So, I think we all have to recognize that it's not only about our participation in vaccines for our own children, but for the entire common good.
So what would your recommendation then be for parents?
Well, I think that right now that the recommendations from the Centers for Disease Control about vaccination strategies are very sensible. The people that put those together are not only physicians, but parents groups and users groups from across the country get together to decide what is the best way to use vaccines. And so I would follow the recommendations of the Centers for Disease Control and the Public Health Service.
Before we wrap this up, gentlemen, what else can be learned from analyzing historical data like this? Dr. Van Panhouse.
Well, as we said already, the impact of disease programs. But on the other hand, it gives a very nice overview of the history of diseases in the U.S. and the history of public health in the United States. It gives a snapshot of a century-long disease reporting in one overview, as we've shown in the paper. And we're excited to see what other people will do with these data, as Dr. Brooks said, as they find the data, do their own research on it. We're really thrilled to see what explorations other people will do with this, as well as we're continuing our own research on disease patterns and the impact of programs.
Dr. Willem Van Panhouse is an assistant professor of epidemiology at the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. Also joining us, Dr. Donald Burke, the dean of the School of Pitt Public Health, here with us in Studio A. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh. We've enjoyed the conversation.
So have we. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
Coming up, Holmes for the Holidays. We'll talk with the stars of the latest Sherlock Holmes play at The Pict when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.